Hey guys, what's up? Welcome to a brand new podcast here at CycloneFanatic.com. Today's brought to you by our good friends at the Iowa Clinic Men's Center. That's where I went to get my colonoscopy last year, Jeff Woody.
That's a great way to start a podcast. I had my butthole looked at.
I did. It was glorious. It wasn't that bad, really.
Like every, I wouldn't think it would
be. The worst part of the colonoscopy is the prep. The stuff you have to drink.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't even what happens in the bathroom. It's more actually like physically drinking it.
Oh, it just tastes terrible?
The day of the colonoscopy, I mean, you get up early, which kind of stinks, but then you take a really long nap, and then you know, your wife drives you home, and you take a longer nap. And it was the most like relaxing day I've had in 3 years.
Yeah, that doesn't sound bad at all.
No. So, shout out to Dr. Larson is the one who performed the Williams colonoscopy. Trying to think of Doc Nicholson, that's where I get my physicals. I got a physical scheduled for October. Do you get an annual physical, Jeff?
I have not.
You need to run your blood.
I know,
you need to get it. I mean, you never know.
I know.
You're a big, strong, healthy guy, but I mean, stuff happens.
I have an interesting family history because I have high cholesterol in my family, but in my mom's dad and my dad, but both of them smoked for like 30 years.
Oh, yeah.
So I do need to get my blood run to see if it's the smoking that caused that
or if
it was genetic. So,
well, check out the guys at the Iowa Clinic Men's Center, and they will they'll assist you in that. IAMenCenter.com. Let's talk Iowa State football as we do every week here at Cyclone Fanatic. You know, I feel like, Jeff, it's middle of the day on Wednesday, so we don't need to go too in-depth on, you know, what exactly happened versus Iowa. Just the only reason I say that is we've hashed it out. I mean, mm-hmm. I think it's time for everybody to move on, and there's a big game coming up on Saturday where realistically I feel like if Iowa State beats Toledo, they're right where I had them.
At 2-1.
Yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. I didn't think that they would go – a lot of people – picked them to go 5-0. I mean, I said on this podcast, I just didn't believe that this team
knows how to do that.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I didn't buy it. And you know, according to Vegas, this game, Toledo, is more difficult than the Iowa game, which I also anticipated at the beginning of the year because Toledo's really good.
And doesn't generally Vegas assign 7 points for a home and away?
I don't think it's seven. I think it just
like four.
It depends on the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to say like Toledo would probably get like three because I can't imagine. I mean, if you played there, right?
No, you
weren't on that team.
We went to the team that we traveled, like the small school team that we traveled to, was Tulsa.
And that was a great win.
We also the non-conference road games that we had were what? UConn. Obviously Iowa.
You got Iowa, Tulsa.
Tulsa. Did we go anywhere else? I don't think we went anywhere else in my 8 years at Iowa State.
Well, this is a weird game. When you ratchet up the fact that they just beat Arkansas, it makes it even more odd. Let's backpedal before we jump on the Tulsa preview. Man, again, I don't want to rehash stuff that I've already said, but I went back and watched the Iowa game last night, and I guess I was wanting to be – well, two things. I'm way more optimistic, and I was optimistic about Iowa State's defense after the game. Like, I love where that group is at.
Right.
I know they gave up a bunch of yards, but
it doesn't
– it was some poor tackling. I get that, but that's – I didn't see like last year where, one, you don't have the athletes, two –
effort was terrible.
Yeah, the effort, and then they weren't in the right spot ever. Mm-hmm. I didn't really see that from this group on Saturday. I'm very optimistic about them, but after watching the second half again, I guess I'm doubling down on my disappointment with the offense. I mean, that was a pathetic effort. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily effort, but just, you know, in general.
Right.
That was a pathetic output.
Right.
In the second, Iowa's not Alabama. They're a nice defense, but come on.
Especially without Ott.
Yeah.
I mean, without your best player.
Yeah.
And I think the thing that that startled me the most is, you know, you ever see boxers that are like really cocky and they like put their hands down and like put their chin forward to like, hey, hit me in the face.
Yeah.
What Iowa was doing was they were saying, run the ball. They put their gloves down. They said, run the ball. Do it. We're going to twist. We're going to stunt. Mm-hmm. We're going to move. We're going to play one-on-one coverage on the outside. Run the ball. I dare you. Come on. Do it. there were, I believe, between 2 and 5 called run plays in the second half. And I don't know, again, I talked about this with Chuck, you and Ross and Chuck on Monday. I don't know if that was because the offensive line and the offensive execution during practice were such that the coaches had no confidence in calling run plays, or if the offensive coaching staff panicked and didn't call run plays. Because if it's me, and you're going to, I mean, we talked about this, you know, ad nauseum on Monday, but if you're going to twist out of a running assignment, out of a gap, like my imploration to anyone listening to sports talk about football is to learn defensive line techniques, because it makes a lot easier. So if you have a 5 shade, 3 and a 5, and you are going to play straight up the field, you have the C gap, the A gap, the B gap, and the C gap covered. Linebackers fill the other two. Perfect. Straight ahead. That's what Iowa wants to do. When you twist, you take a guy out of that shade, out of that A gap, and move him to a different one. If you run where he was, there has to be someone to fill that gap coming from a different location.
Mm-hmm.
All you have to do is get in the way of them, because they're already out of the way. Just stop them from getting to that gap. So twisting and blitzing and stuff like that, run lanes can be huge. So if you're going to twist and you're going to blitz and you're going to do all kinds of stuff like that, which you could probably attest to now that you saw the second half, they did much more of.
It was much more exotic packages.
If you're going to do that, literally, that's a boxer putting his gloves down and going, hit me in the face. Do it. Hit me in the face. And Iowa State did not take advantage of what Iowa was giving them. And to me, again, I don't know if it's chicken or the egg, but either the players didn't give the staff confidence, or the staff just didn't have confidence in general to run the ball, which they absolutely needed to.
How did you you said you just used the word confidence right there, and this has been a big talker. Frankly, I think probably an overrated talker all week, because I didn't hate the decision. I would have loved to have seen Paul Rhodes go for it on 4th and 1 in the second quarter.
Where they punted to put it down inside
where,
the 10.
I mean, and realistically, they shouldn't have even been in that. I have no idea how they overturned that Alan Lazard spot, but that's a whole other conversation. I mean, this has been a big talker all week. Yes, I said it at the time. I would have loved to see Paul Rhodes go for it. However,
it was the right move not to.
He had all the reason in the world not to, and I totally understand where he was coming from. But it, as a player, though, do you – because you hear a lot of fans and analysts say, well, you're not showing confidence in your team.
Mm-hmm.
Do you take it that way, like, personally as a player? Like,
So you're asking the wrong person for that, because I'm a short yardage guy. Like,
yeah.
That was my specialist.
That's
so
what you do.
If you ever didn't go for it on a short yardage down, I'm like, what the hell, man? That's my job. Like,
yeah.
Tell me to do this thing and I'll go do it. But if kind of objectively, if I wasn't playing, or say I was redshirting and I was on the team and I was on the offense and it was a short yardage down, in my head, this is me being, instead of like, impulsive, let's go do this. This is rational thought. You weigh pros and cons of both options. Pro, the upside of getting that first down, cool, you get another set of downs, but you're not that much farther down the field. Yes, the clock can run down a little bit. Maybe you advance the ball down. Potentially, you score a touchdown. So the pro is you keep the ball.
Mm-hmm.
The con, though, right now, at that point in the game, they had, I believe it was a 17-10 lead still, because that was the drive that they had gone down and they faked the field goal on.
Correct, yep.
So say at that point you had a 17-10 lead, your defense was, I would consider, stifling, because the only positive yardage they had, that Iowa had, and that touchdown drive was based on a couple C.J. Beathard scrambles that you almost got a safety on before.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not saying you don't have confidence in your team. The con of that is if you give them the ball back on the 44-yard line or whatever it was on, they've got a really short field right before halftime to go get some kind of points. If you were to drop it off inside the 10, mathematically, Coach Herman always plays this game, and which is why Houston is going to be really good, is he showed a chart of if you start in certain spots in the field, your percentage of scoring points. If you start in plus territory, meaning 50-yard line and in, so a short field, your odds of getting points are somewhere between 90 and 95%. You're going to end up with points if your drive starts inside the 50. If your drive starts inside of the 10, there is a 3% likelihood that you come away with points.
Wow.
So if you play the odds in the sense that if I put this inside the 10 and say they run a couple good plays, they mathematically are most likely going to end up stalling out in the middle of the field and they're going to have to punt it back and then no points happen. So as a short yardage back, as an offensive player, I would say, let's go for it. But then if you take like half a step back and go, okay, if we give them the ball back on the 50-yard line, they get points, and then we're ruining our advantage at halftime. I understand why they did that. So I think it was the right call. I don't think it's not showing confidence in your offense. I think it's showing confidence in your defense.
Yeah.
Saying like, we're going to give you a long field. Stop them. We know you can. Go ahead.
Which, you know, Beathard made that play, but man, it was close. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Paul was really close to looking like a really smart football coach
right.
in that scenario.
Right. Because if he gets tackled by, I think it was Levi on that one, kind of underestimated how fast C.J. Beathard is, which is actually really – he's like Steel Jantz. Like, he starts running, and you're like, oh, this guy's running pretty quick, until you try and run with him, and you're like, oh, my God, this guy is fast. I think C.J.'s way faster than people give him credit for.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Levi just took a bad angle. And like you said, had he been tackled – that was a second down and nine. Had he been tackled at the line of scrimmage, it's third and nine – they have to drop back and pass. You can get creative and get a blitz, and then you sack them on the five.
Mm-hmm.
Terrific.
And the game's totally different.
Then you punt.
If that 44-yard scramble doesn't happen,
mm-hmm.
that's a totally different football game.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't that the drive, too, that Tucker got hurt?
Yeah.
Boy, now I'm really digging deep.
That was – I don't know, mathematically, that wasn't a fluke drive for them to give up points. Because it shouldn't have happened had C.J. Beathard not had this crazy scramble.
Yeah. What is there a reason? I feel like Iowa State's defense, if I could pick apart one thing with it so far this year, it does seem to be very very open to that scramble.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because Northern Iowa, that was probably 50% of the offense the Panthers mm-hmm. got in that game. And
right.
then, I mean, hell.
Beathard runs for 100.
Yeah, Beathard ran for 100 yards on that. Is there a reason for that?
I don't know. And I don't know if it's because the quarterbacks they've been playing are really mobile. Well, one, okay, you and I, they had like 18 quarterbacks they could have chosen from. So you can't really game plan for a mobile quarterback because
yeah.
you have to game plan for everything. So
yeah.
you're not specifically – so you can kind of throw that one out. I would say Beathard, I think what they did is they underestimated how fast he was and how mobile he was. They thought he was an Iowa quarterback that's going to drop back and throw it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if it's necessarily susceptible to it or they've been caught off guard in two different ways in two different games. Now, I think Toledo, if I'm not mistaken, has another really mobile quarterback.
Philip Eli.
Yeah, the kid from – the one kid that was from Alabama.
Didn't see him last year.
Yep.
He was hurt for that game last year, and they still almost beat us. But, I guess I don't know how mobile he is. I watched Coach Campbell's press conference yesterday. He raved about how much great of a game manager he was in that Arkansas game, just in the you know, that was a real field mm-hmm. position type football game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I guess I would be surprised if he's C.J. Beathard mobility-wise.
Right. He'll be a little more dropback. I thought I was going with the quarterback that was there last year who was a little more of a,
oh, okay.
a little more of a runner.
Yeah, no.
I forgot that Eli was – getting
yeah.
playing.
You've got Eli, and then you've got Kareem Hunt, who also didn't play last year for Toledo
mm-hmm.
against Iowa State.
The good news for Iowa State in comparing last year to this year is last year they had five redshirt senior offensive linemen.
Yeah.
Now they don't.
Yeah.
So, granted, they did, I feel like they filled the roles pretty well if you go down to Fayetteville and beat Arkansas.
That game was in Little Rock, just
Little
for
Rock,
the sake of accuracy.
Me. Excuse me.
Yeah.
But it's in Little Rock, and
yeah,
you
it's a home game for Arkansas.
Yeah. You end up beating them. So, I don't know. It's interesting, very interesting that what they're going to be facing. But I don't know. As far as a scrambling quarterback, I don't think the defense itself is susceptible to it, provided you alert the guys to it.
Let's talk injuries real quick with DeMond Tucker. Like a high ankle, I believe, is what's going on there. It's kind of what it sounds like. They say he's going to play
mm-hmm.
on Saturday. The mild deal, though, like he needs to be close to 100%, doesn't he? Just with the way that he plays, it's not like he's a mauler type defensive tackle. I mean,
mm-hmm.
he's got that quick twitch. If he's at 60% on one leg, I feel like that could really impact him.
Yes, but the advantage, I think, the disadvantage that you have, and the reason why the defense looked kind of worse when he left. Was one, he's a really good player, and keeping him in is obviously better. But I think the more important issue was that you take away one of your defensive tackle rotations, and one of a defensive tackle in a 3-4 and we talk about defensive line technique. So a five technique, pop quiz, where's a five technique?
On the defense?
Defensive line, where's a five technique?
It's the well, can I draw it out for you?
Well, no one can see it on the podcast.
Well, I know, but if I can draw it out for you, it's really hard to describe. It's to the
outside shoulder of the tackle.
The outside shoulder of the tackle?
Okay. It's a five technique.
I was going to say the three technique then.
Three technique. That's where
I was. That's what I was going to describe, yeah. So I was wrong. I missed the pop quiz.
Come on, Williams.
Hey, at least I've admitted it. I could have totally just acted like I knew what I was talking
about.
Yeah. But no, I was going to describe the three technique, which is only...
outside shoulder of the guard.
Yeah, yeah. That was Jake McDonough.
Yes.
Yeah. See, and I know. I kind of know what I'm talking about.
Right.
That was Jake McDonough.
Right. So, he played shade, too. So... you have five.
Explain the shade for our folks.
So five technique is outside the tackle. It's your traditional defensive end spot in a four down line front. A three technique, he plays and lines up on the outside shoulder of the guard on either side. The shade lines up on either one of. So if you're lining up, a difference between a shade and a head up nose is that in a head up nose, I'm meeting both of my eyes to both of your eyes. Essentially, a shade picks one eye. So my left eye will line up with your left eye.
So it's like 50-50.
So it's like, I'm half of my body is lined up on the center and half of my body is lined up in the A gap, which is the one right next to the center. So a shade is just off of the center. So
if a fan is just watching this on TV, though, like you can't really watch for that unless you go back and watch again, right?
Sort of, kind of. So here's where I was going with that is in a three down front, essentially what Iowa State does, they either have what's called a four eye or a five technique defensive end, meaning a four eye lines up instead of the outside shoulder of the tackle, they line up on the inside shoulder of the tackle. So if both sides, it's always going to be symmetrical in a three down front. So it's either they're going to play a head up nose and then you're the fours or a head up nose and fives. Most of the time they've been playing a head up nose and fives. What that means is my head up nose is playing nose to nose with the center. The guards are completely uncovered because the defensive ends are in five techniques, which is outside of the tackle. So why DeMond Tucker needs to play is because as a defensive tackle, you are very, very fatigued very quickly because you have to deal with not only the center that you're head up against, both guards are uncovered. So if they want to hit you, there's nothing to slow them down before they hit you.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to be able to hunker down from both sides. That's the advantage and the disadvantage is that if you have three guys, say DeMond Tucker, Trent Taylor, and Dale Pearson are the three down linemen, then if your three guys can for some reason hold up the five offensive linemen, then it gives you an extra body to run around behind.
Mm-hmm.
The downside of that is if you don't have the depth on the defensive line to rotate in, or you know a Terrence Cody that can just take and throw a dude out of a bar, if you don't have that, defensive tackles get fatigued much faster in a three down than they do in a four down because they have an extra person, extra unblocked person to deal with.
Gotcha.
Say we're playing that 5-3 shade and five. The shade is the person that's essentially the equivalent of the nose tackle. He only has to deal with because he's splitting the distance between a center and a guard. He's only has two people to deal with because the other tackle is covered by the defensive end and the other guard is involved with the three technique. So if that other guard wanted to come hit him, he'd have to go through the three technique to get him there. So in a five down front, long answer to a short question, DeMond Tucker's biggest impact was not, yes, he's a great player. Yes, he makes a huge difference. But when you take your rotation down from three or four guys now to two or three, then they get fatigued much quicker. They don't get as much time to rest and they're going to wear down much faster. If they wear down a lot faster, then the advantage of a 3-4 goes away because then your three guys aren't able to hold up five guys and let your linebackers run around. So DeMond Tucker playing at 70%, as long as his 70% is functional and he's not getting just blown off the ball, that's a good thing because it just allows more bodies to get there so that the nose tackles can rest.
That makes sense. Well, when I watch back again, I mean, it just seemed like, and I don't want to pick on Vernell Trent, but it seemed like when Tucker was in there, you know, Tucker would be tying up two guys and pushing them back three yards.
Yep, which makes your defense a lot better.
Yeah, and then it seemed like Trent would be one guy pushing him back 3 yards.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's not fair, but that's kind of that's kind of what I came down to.
It's not fair. Obviously, I don't think Toledo center is going to be Austin Blythe, because Blythe
that's
is one of the best
point.
Centers in the country.
Yeah.
But I think Tucker, And the good news about a high ankle sprain, so I had that injury, and I believe that's what LaShawn Daniels has. Like, I saw the play when Daniels got hurt from my vantage point, and it looked like the injury he sustained was a high ankle sprain. So the difference between a running back and a defensive tackle having a high sprain, so long as you can put pressure through it as a defensive tackle, you're not really going to have to cut much. And if you do have to cut, meaning like change direction going from one to another, most likely it's going to be a slight deviation. Like, you're not going to be running full speed in one direction, slam on the brakes, and run full speed in another direction like a running back would, where a defensive tackle is, generally speaking, going to go straight up the field. And if you can bear weight through it, where a high ankle sprain hurts a lot is when you try and cut off of that foot. So if he's able to go and he's able to push back straight up field, it's going to occupy those offensive linemen. There you get your advantage back. He himself may not be able to get the sacks and have the lateral quickness to go run down a quarterback, but he can at least occupy those defensive linemen and let Jarner Jones or let Dale Pearson or let Luke Knott get a sack.
Man, who is there anybody who wants Tucker back more than Dale Pearson?
Oh,
jeebany, he's just making hay off of Tucker.
Yes. Because then your three guys, your guard, center, and other guard have to account for Tucker. Yeah. If he picks a side, the other guard has to be aware of it. And if you hold him up for just like a half a second, Dale Pearson one-on-one with a defensive end or with an offensive tackle is fantastic.
Well, and I feel like, too, I have this dream of mine where Tucker is 100%. We can get Justin Thomas to be the guy who I think he's going to be, have him opposite of Pearson in the 3-4. I mean, seriously, because then basically, I mean, I think Justin Thomas, when he finally...
Dale a senior?
Yeah.
Damn.
I know.
Justin's a junior, right?
Justin's a junior.
DeMond's a junior.
DeMond is a junior.
Jay Jones is a junior.
Yeah. I mean, you're losing...
Levi's a sophomore.
You're losing Tucker and you're losing Pearson this year.
And Taylor, right? Trent Taylor's a senior.
Yeah. No, you're losing Taylor and Pearson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everyone else comes back.
J.D. Wagner hasn't been terrible.
He's just little. For a defensive line spot. Like, Pierre Aka is, I guess Dale's physical tools allow him to be a good defensive end. If I'm going to create a defensive end in a 3-4 system, give me Pierre Aka. I want someone like that. At defensive end, because you're three dudes, if you're gonna rush the passer, like against a Baylor, give me Dale Pearson. But if you're going to just run, you're playing a team that... You're playing Iowa. That's the equivalent of, like, not necessarily Jake McDonough, but maybe Cleon Lang, who's going to be 290, 285, that can occupy two defensive linemen at the same time. So the bigger and more physical they are, you want your linebackers to make tackles. So if my defensive line can hold up the offensive linemen to allow the linebackers to run around and make tackles, that's what I would want. So Dale's a really good pass rusher, and he's actually a pretty good run stopper, but he's, I think, 270.
Yeah, he's not very big.
He's 265, 270, which is a good size. Like, Mitchell Myers at full strength would be a really, really, really good defensive end in 3-4 system.
Yeah.
Really good. So maybe by the end of the year, if he's healthy enough to do it, or
next year,
if he's able to do it, that he'd be a really good fit for that defensive end spot.
Is it ignorant of me, and I do realize the issues that that Justin Thomas had. I mean, the first game, he didn't even know where to line up.
Yes.
But man, I'd love to see them take his hand off the ground and
do give a little Clay Matthews action.
Seriously, like that.
But
when I went down on the field for a little bit for warmups and was just watching him, and that's all I could think about. Like, I became obsessed with it. Like, him in 3-4, like, taking his hand off the ground and letting them rumble
and just say, "Go tackle the quarterback."
Yeah. I mean, but that's got to be going through their mind, like, eventually with him, doesn't
it? I think
it?
So. I think that the thing that he needs to – and I've said this about JUCOs before, and this is – Coach McKnight had said this. I need about the time it took – or about the time they had at junior college to get the junior college out of them. So if they were at junior college for 2 years, he needs about 2 years to get them to be
– Yeah.
The work ethic and shape that they need to be in. So Justin Thomas was at JUCO for a year and a half.
I believe so, yeah.
This whole season is going to be essentially getting him in shape and working hard enough for him to understand.
Luckily, he came here in June, though.
Right.
So it's not like he showed up in August, which that was Dale Pearson last year. Mm-hmm. Like, he got here like the day at camp.
Yeah. So with Justin Thomas, you might see him towards the end of the year once he gets in football shape and figures out like how hard he actually has to go at the Division I level as opposed to the junior college level. You get Pearson on one side, you get Justin Thomas on the other side, and you get DeMond Tucker in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have linebackers running around like Jordan Harris, Jay Jones, Willie Harvey, Kane Seeley, Levi Peters. You have a pretty solid front seven, which is insane to think about with how bad they were last year.
You want to know what's insane is the fact that through 2 weeks, an Iowa State Cyclone leads the country in sacks.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, like there's not a statistic in college football that would have been less likely before the season based off of track record.
Yeah. When was the last time we had a like really dominant sacking presence? Jason Berryman?
Berryman.
Was he after Ace Bowen? Or was it?
That was the same defense.
Same time?
That 2005 defense is probably my favorite unit in Iowa State history. That, God, I loved it. And I was a little biased because my best friend was one of the linebackers. But, well, I mean, they're like their stats, like their scoring defense and their turnovers force. I mean, it was an elite defense in the Big 12 at that time. The front seven was just stupid. You had Nick Leaders, you had Brent Curvey, Sean Moorhead, and Jason Berryman.
Mm.
And then you had Ace Bowen, Tyrone McKenzie, and Adam Carper as your linebackers. And then I think you had Stevie Paris was one safety, LaMarcus Hicks at corner, DeAndre Jackson at corner. I'm missing one safety. Oh, Nick Mosier, I believe. Fort Dodge's Nick Mosier was a strong safety.
That's nuts.
It was a good defense.
That's a solid defense.
Yeah. They get Toledo on Saturday night. I picked them to lose this game before the season began, but I had them beating Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Like, maybe it's still like the September optimism, but I still think it's a pretty winnable game, even though despite Toledo winning. I mean,
it actually might be a good thing.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, yes, Toledo's a kind of a winning program, but
they have that. The thing that worries me, though, Jeff, is they've got that, like, winning culture over there.
Yeah.
They expect to be the Iowa States of the world.
Right. I guess the good news for me, though, is how many times does a MAC school play, I guess, one of the Power Five, one of the big boys during the year? Maybe once, usually. So you're usually not going to play a Power Five school back-to-back weeks. So you can kind of rest your laurels on as a, you know, FCS or MAC school. You can kind of – my hope is that they would – take that win and then pull off the gas just a little bit because they invested so much into that game in order to beat Arkansas in Arkansas. I mean, that's a lot of emotional push. And then all of a sudden, like, I mean, think about back to like, I mean, not necessarily, this is a huge hyperbole, so don't like take it for a literal example, but like say your wedding day or like the day your daughter was born, like how much emotion you had that day. And then all of a sudden the next day you are just like emotionally drained. So, like, you can't do as much as you want the next day because of how much emotion was expended the previous week.
Yeah.
So, my hope is that even though they have a winning culture, it is kind of human reaction to, like, man, I'm glad we did that. And then not work as intently in the next following week. And the other thing that I was thinking about this game is I still don't know what Iowa State team to expect. Because if you take the second half of the UNI game and the first half of the Iowa game, they looked really good.
Yeah.
You take the first half of the UNI game and the second half of the Iowa game, they looked pretty bad.
No, you're right.
Specifically on offense. And I don't know which team is the real team, whether it's the good one, whether it's the bad one, or somewhere in between. I'm going to say that if they play and use this last game as kind of a wake-up call to go, hey, you have to – not only do you have to have that intensity to start the game, but you have to have the same amount of intensity throughout the game, and this is kind of a teaching moment for those younger, newer guys, and even some of the older guys who hadn't been around success, that I hope that, one, Toledo generally is going to have an emotional letdown, not necessarily from 100 to 80, but from 100 to, like, 95. And then Iowa State realizes that pulling off the gas in the second half emotionally and aggressively is going to remind them of what they need to do.
The blah performance of the beginning of the third quarter, who do you blame that on? Is that the guys not being able to quote Bill O'Brien on Hard Knocks, create their own juice?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it a coaching deal? Probably everything combined, but like, that's frustrating for fans, I know, to see, man, you got this lead, you can put Iowa in a hole, and they just, I mean, there's like a lack of urgency is what it looked like.
Yeah, no, that's, I think that lies a lot on both, but I think it, the urgency lies more on the players.
Yeah.
Another one of Coach Rhodes' phrases, the dude is huge on catchphrases, and one of his phrases that I like too is, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. And you can say all the right things and you can do all the right things at halftime, but the guys themselves have to want to be out there, and they have to like fully understand what the situation is and how much it takes to do it. So I think what they did is they were, I mean, you can't, no bones about it. Like, Iowa State was dominating the first half, offensively and defensively. The only offense that Iowa had was C.J. Beathard scrambling to get them out of terrible situations. Like, they were, third and seven or third and eight on the two-yard line. Then he scrambles for 50 yards. And then they had him in another third down, and then he threw a crazy pass to Devon Smith against good coverage. Like, the only way that Iowa advanced the ball was from like insane plays that you just got to tip your hat to C.J. Beathard and go, hey, great play, man. So they were dominating offensively and defensively in the first half. And they just figured, we're just going to keep doing this. So they didn't have the same amount of urgency. So I would chalk it up to both the coaching staff and the players, but more the players.
Let's move on. I don't know how much you followed this, but I think it's interesting for Iowa State fans to watch this athletic director drama at Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Patterson was fired on Tuesday.
After 22 months.
Yeah.
Hadn't even been there 2 years.
This is such a big deal, though. Like, not necessarily directly on Iowa State, but for the Big 12. I mean, with the political wand that Texas has to wave down there in Austin, like, this is a really, like, I don't want to, like, fearmonger or anything with the realignment and all that stuff, because it's a very different world, I think, than it was in 2010. And I'm actually pretty secure with Iowa State's positioning in the college football landscape these days. But, man, like, am I overreacting to this? Like, I tend to be a bit of a conspiracy theorist, and I overanalyze a lot of things that probably I shouldn't be wasting my time on, but I'm really intently watching what happens down there.
I think it's it kind of depends, because it kind of depends on the nature of what they are looking for. Because I think, like, you look at an athletic director like Director Pollard. Director Pollard is an accounting guy, where he's looking at dollars and cents, and he's looking how to increase that, the almighty dollar, which he's done a very good job at. There are also guys that look at trying to increase, like, solely increase the prestige of a university. And I think if there's a dollars and cents guy in there, they're going to understand where, where kind of pulling it back to Iowa State's thing. If you look at an Iowa State, if you have 10 members and you can then make Texas succeed in that conference, then 10 members of getting all that revenue, you get a bigger chunk of the pie. So I don't think if they get a dollars and cents guy, like someone like Jamie Pollard, Texas would securely want to lock themselves into the Big 12 because of how much more money they could get for themselves.
Yeah, well, that creates a whole other deal too, Jeff, because all the changing television contracts.
Right.
I mean, how much? And I think that we're kind of, believe it or not, I think the television contract conversation before too long is going to be an archaic type of conversation with all the cord cutting and stuff going on. It'll be interesting to see what kind of a deal the Big Ten gets as its rights are being bidded on right now. But, do you remember, like, in 2010, though, like, that's all it was about. All
right, it's all about TV money.
TV eyeballs or whatever. And I kind of feel like in this new round, like, whenever it happens, like, these institutions are actually going to have to stand on their merits. And that's how, that's how it's going to be decided who lives and who doesn't. And that if that's the case, Iowa State's fine.
Right, because we're pulling 61,000 and we've got success in basketball and we've got success in
30,000 plus enrollment.
And
I don't know. I'm probably overanalyzing it, but the one that scared me yesterday was hearing Bob Boolsby's name be thrown around.
I would doubt that he would.
He pulled his name out.
Yeah.
Publicly.
I would really doubt that he would go down there. Just personally speaking, I would think that that'd be a difficult thing for him to do if he were to go down there because of the position that he was in.
Yeah.
That you're going to, invite a lot of personal criticism if Very you go so. From the Big 12 commissioner to the athletic director of Texas, that's, I feel like that's going to be, that would be a can of worms that he wouldn't want, no matter how much that position may mean, which I don't know. I don't know what ties he would have to Texas.
Personally, I think that Texas AD job is a better job than the Big 12 commissioner, but that's whatever. I mean, that's fairly irrelevant. Let's do a little Big 12 conversation.
Okay.
Here. Oklahoma topping Tennessee over the weekend. Did you get to watch that?
With Baker Mayfield, man.
Dude, he is.
He's a real deal.
I love that.
He's a real deal. Yeah, he's, I'm going to say this, you're a Vikings fan. He is the college equivalent of Brett Favre.
Really?
Because the dude has absolutely zero fear and is made exclusively of passion. Like, he loves playing. He is has no fear that he is going to back foot huck one 50 yards across the grain just because he knows that the guy's open over there. Every coach in the country is going to be like, no, God bless, no, stop it. Stop. Okay, touchdown. Nice. Good work. Nice job, Baker. So he does that all the time. Yeah. And the great thing about that is the Favre-led Packers teams and the Favre-led Vikings team, if you have that fearless mentality, you're in every game that you play.
I kind of feel like Oklahoma through the first 2 weeks, if you're going based off of what these teams have done, should be the Big 12's favorite at this point.
They are. In my eyes, they are.
Yeah.
Because of Baylor has been less than impressive.
Dude, they've been
less than impressive.
Jeez.
I mean, they ended up pulling away against Lamar. But, yeah, but it's Lamar. You shouldn't be close to Lamar.
Nobody, I would venture to say that 5% of the people listening to this know what state Lamar is located
in. I don't.
I don't either.
Louisiana? Maybe?
I have no idea.
I don't know where Lamar is. I know that they are
not. I don't really care.
They're not at the caliber of Baylor.
Yeah. Well, they're not even. I mean, Lamar is half of what, like, you and I is.
Right. Okay? And this. So Baylor has looked less than impressive. You get them in a tough road game. I don't know if they can pull that out, and we'll get back to Baylor in a second. TCU started off looking very good. And then finds out that three of their defensive players, which was already the more depleted unit, three of their defensive players are either done for the season or had stepped away for personal reasons, which a personal...
They're down like five now.
Yeah. Oh, who else had gone down? Because both Freeze the linebacker, that other linebacker.
McFarland, I think.
McFarland, the D-end.
The D-end. And then they lost a kid. They lost a guy on Saturday. In their win on Saturday. I think they're down five guys. I can't name them all off the top of my head, but I've just kind of been keeping a tally on my Evernote.
Yeah, and like, I mean, Gary Patterson can coach defense. And give him a couple weeks before he gets really good tests. I think they're going to be okay.
Yeah.
But put them against...
Well, their offense is so good.
Right. But put them against Oklahoma.
Yeah.
When you can kind of match... When you can match talent for talent, you have to win by execution.
Mm-hmm.
Then that's going to be where the toughness is made. The onus, the X factor that TCU has is Trevon Boykin.
Yeah.
That keeps them in every game.
You have an elite Heisman-level guy.
Right. And he proved that, one, Minnesota's really good in the first week, because the second week they hang 72 up. And they didn't look like he was breathing hard with how good they looked. But to kind of come back to Oklahoma, Bob Stoops plays best when he's not expected to do anything.
Yep.
Like against that Alabama game in the Sugar Bowl, no one picked Oklahoma to win. And they came out, and Trevor Knight looked fantastic, and that never happens. So Oklahoma right now, for my money, is the favorite because of what's happened to TCU and how Baylor's played. The thing with Baylor, and I tweeted this the first game that I watched when they were playing SMU and actually playing close with SMU, which is what the hell was going on there.
Mm-hmm.
But they miss Bryce Hager badly from last year.
Yeah.
And Bryce Hager was the middle linebacker. He was the active leader. Use the active presence that got that defense to mesh together, because when Hager was a junior and a senior, their defense ranked inside the top half. And then for his junior year, they ranked top half. Senior year, they ranked in the top 15 outside of the TCU game or a couple other notable games. Outside of those years, Baylor's defenses have been notoriously terrible.
Yeah.
Not okay, not average, not adequate. Terrible.
Yeah.
And you can't, I mean, the Nick Florence year, when they were, two in scoring in the country, but they were like 119th in scoring defense, and they finished like 7-5.
Yeah.
Or 8-4, whatever it was. The year that not and his last game.
The shoulder thing, yeah.
Right. That year, so Baylor misses a leader linebacker presence, and I don't think Sean Oakman has that character in him to lead a whole unit. I think he's a guy that's going to get his, but he's just going to get his to get his.
So what are you tabbing Baylor at right now? Like two losses?
Two losses, yeah.
That's kind of where I have them
right think now. They get beat by TCU and Oklahoma. I wouldn't be surprised if maybe they pull off an upset of one of those two, but lose to
OSU
or like Kansas State for some reason, like pulls off an upset in Manhattan.
Man, they haven't looked very good either.
No, because their quarterback's...
The kid from Iowa, he's out.
Yep.
A bunch of dog games in the Big 12 on Saturday. I mean, it's not even worth mentioning other than... Oh, I guess a couple. Texas Tech at Arkansas is okay. And then you've got Cal at Texas.
I have no idea what Cal is like.
Yeah, neither do I. But I have a pretty good read on Texas right now, and I don't think they're very good.
What?
So... I probably favor the Pac-12 in that one, but I have no idea. I got no idea what Cal's bringing to the table. Have not gotten there to my Saturday prep at this point in time. The most interesting game on the docket's Iowa State at Toledo, of course. I mean, if you go by...
Aside from Tech Arkansas may get more national attention because it's Arkansas, and Bielema's a... I love the... Bielema is the Donald Trump of the college football world, where he's going to say whatever he wants for absolutely no reason and piss off whoever he wants.
He just doesn't care.
And doesn't care.
No.
Which is not, I mean, that's not a good quality, to just piss off everybody just because you can piss them off and then give them reason to not like you. Yeah, no, I wouldn't advise doing that.
I hope he's the next coach at Iowa. God, that'd be fun. There's some really good SEC games this weekend. You've got Auburn at LSU, and you've got Ole Miss at Alabama. So we got some good football. I felt good about the Oregon Michigan State game. Mm-hmm. Like that was a nice game. Tennessee Oklahoma. I feel like you got Georgia Tech at Notre Dame. We got a lot of good football on Saturday.
Is that you're going to play for Notre Dame?
No, I think he's out. He's like out for the year, isn't he?
I didn't see what his injury was. I just saw that he was.
Yeah, he's out, man. What sucks is Ole Miss Alabama is the same time as Iowa State.
Yeah, and that's in Tuscaloosa.
But the other two games that I mentioned are 2:30 kicks. So we'll get the two TV setup going here in Casa de Williams. You come on over if you'd like.
I probably will.
You're welcome. I'll invite Jack Whitford. He usually comes over too on Saturdays.
Is Marco Rubio coming?
Did you see all that?
Jack's buddy. And you causing a national media firestorm.
I felt bad.
You personally are causing this country to fall apart, Chris Williams.
I texted Jack last night. I'm like, dude, I'm really sorry about this. I didn't try and get Marco in trouble.
So we'll reset this for a second for those of you that aren't like totally familiar with it. So Rubio came on to Williams' show and Chris got him on the line of conversation about college football, and he said something to the effect of, hey, I have nothing against Florida State. There has to be a place that people who can't get into Florida can go.
Yeah.
And it just digging Florida State, I mean, right there. I mean, needle to the gut.
Just quality smack.
Quality smack talk. And it's on USA Today. It's in the New York Post. It's in Fox News. It's on CNN. It's on all of this stuff. And it's referencing 1460 KXNO Sports Fanatics. So Chris Williams is causing a media firestorm across the country
towards
Marco Rubio trash-talking Florida State, which is the best controversy that has ever come out of Des Moines.
The thing is, like, if you listen to the interview, all I said was, in all due respect to Mr. Rubio, like, he's responsible for this. Because he was going to the Iowa State-Iowa game, and I knew he was a Florida fan, and he graduated from there. And I said, what's the Florida State-Florida rivalry like? You know, in comparison to this, give me a taste of what that rivalry is like. And that's how he answered. He goes, well, I like Florida State, but... that's where all the people who can't get into Florida go, you know? And so then, you know, I think USA Today was the first to pick it up. Because the thing is, like, we didn't even, Like, we just laughed it off and didn't even think anything of it. And then
it's smack talk. It's what goes on.
Yeah, but
day.
Then Monday we're sitting there at G-Migs doing our radio show, and all of a sudden these tweets start rolling in. Like, Clay Travis blogged about it that outkicked the coverage, and it was on USA Today, and then ESPN picked it up that night. And then last night I'm sitting here flipping through the channels, and I go to Fox News, and I freaking see this Rubio quote with this screenshot up there.
Which, just terrific.
Isn't it funny, though?
So many things.
Dude, look at all the refugees in Syria. And you know what I mean? Like, this world has so many messed up components, and we're wasting our time. And that's the thing about Trump, and I don't want to get too political here, but my wife and I were sitting having dinner last night. And I said, can you believe we live in a country where this guy actually has a legitimate shot to be president?
And it's nuts because, like, the crazy, and again, not to get too political because I don't want to ostracize anybody, but like, you look at the way that he like argues and debates things, like,
it's like a child.
Yeah, if you bring up something like, hey, you said something that's extremely sexist and extremely demeaning towards women, and you basically said, you literally said you would look better on your knees to a woman, and the way he debates that is, no, I didn't, you're stupid, get out of here. Like, that's the way he debates that, and it's like a four-year-old. But that guy has a shot to be the president.
It's a double standard, though, Jeff, because I am entertained by it. I can't wait to watch the debate tonight.
It'd be a great TV show. God. And then you're like I hope that this, what America is doing, is just like stoking the fire to like keep him in here so he can care about it. And then as soon as it comes serious time, be like, all right, now you can go home. You can take your hammer and nails and just go back to your house and play with him by yourself. I hope that's the case.
Hey. I'll say this: Trump's kind of crazy, but man, he's made it interesting. And I'm glad that Ross Peterson and I could be a major part of the
Republican
the political cycle. I want to get Trump on the show. That's like my goal now, because I got a little taste of this political.
You know, I got another just a sports beef with Donald Trump.
Yeah,
he tweeted out he's excited to be at Jack Truce Stadium.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, that was a bad. That's a bad. Bad move.
Get off my lawn, Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Get off my lawn.
Don't disrespect the great Jack Trice.
Only Division I stadium named after an African American, and you spelled it wrong. Mm. Well, I guess he doesn't really have a problem offending minorities, so.
I was going to say. Jeffrey, thank you for your time.
My pleasure. Glad we could talk politics and my distaste for Donald Trump.
Do you have a prediction on the game?
I don't know enough about Toledo.
Okay. Then you can save it for our picks column. You don't need to do it now.
Yeah.
It's only Wednesday.
My hope is that Iowa State responds better, better to this push, this kind of misunderstanding of effort against Iowa to Toledo. So I would hope that Iowa State responds, but I don't really know. Like, I don't know what to expect from them on the first road game, just coming off of a disappointing loss.
Yeah.
If they take it to heart and it's kind of let us bring them down, or if they respond and fight back from it. I don't know what team to expect. So I don't know. I'll do a little more research on Toledo before we get to the picks, which come out on Thursday.
Yeah, Thursday or Friday.
So
just depends on when people get their picks in.
Right.
Which it's not that bad this year because there's only like five of us.
And Gray might be a little behind.
Yeah, we got to give a shout out. I was going to do that to Adam Gray's family. Little Olivia was born yesterday.
And I saw him put out a tweet. Congratulations, Adam. To have a daughter, good for him. I thought it was funny too. Olivia Gray is his first and last name they decided on. He said, we were going to go with Marie as a middle name, but we didn't want her initials to be OMG.
That'd be great.
Especially because it's a gray child.
Yeah, that is funny. Yeah, but congrats to them. I'm going to go meet Olivia today.
You going to bring your daughter and have a little daughter fest?
No. Well, I don't think they let, like, my daughter in.
Mm. Oh, you're going to the hospital.
Yeah, I'm going to go. I'm going to go to the hospital.
I didn't know when the approved time for them to leave was.
I think it's tomorrow.
Okay.
Yeah, I believe it's on Thursday, but yeah, good stuff. He's Jeff Woody. I'm Chris Williams. Thanks to the Iowa Clinic Men's Center, iamencenter.com. Go get that physical. Yeah, you stubborn idiot. Get in there. We don't want you to die.
That's really aggressive, Chris. That's true. We don't want you to die.
It comes out of love, I promise. We'll talk to you guys later.